Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR in DC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, talking here on the day after the round of eight cutoff race at Martinsville Speedway, where Ryan Blaney won to advance to the championship race at Phoenix. Also, William Byron qualifies for the championship round. They will join Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson in the championship race this Sunday at Phoenix Raceway on NBC. And here to join me to talk about it is our NASCAR Hall of Famer analyst, Dale Jarrett. DJ, Ryan Blaney didn't need to win this race. He had performed really well in this round so far, finished sixth at Vegas, second at Homestead. So he came in 10 points above the cut line, but he seized the moment. I mean, he left this as a no doubter, led the second most laps in the race, 145 laps led, kind of dominated the second half after he and Denny Hamlin had battled a couple of stages. So what did you see here from Ryan Blaney, and what impressed you about his performance at Martinsville?
And I think the biggest thing as I was sitting watching the race was this was exactly what we had projected and thought that we were going to see from Ryan Blaney as he entered into the Xfinity series a number of years ago, that with the talent that we saw there, the abilities that he has shown as he got into Cup and got that first win with the Wood Brothers, you know, these were the things that we had in place and in mind for Ryan Blaney to do. Probably unrealistically, we expected him to do it every year, but he has matured into that driver that we thought was there all along. And this round of eight was so impressive. I mean, he was the driver that was in all the races that you kept seeing his name pop up. And especially the last two, he knew what he had to do as he didn't have a ton of points built up from the regular season. It was probably going to take a win in rounds as we got closer to cutoffs. The run yesterday was just so impressive. You know, the car had it was enough speed at the beginning of a run, makes for some great racing between he and Denny Hamlin in particular. He was able to outshine everyone once they got 25, 30 laps on tires. And then the longer the run went, you know, it's not that his car got faster. It just didn't fall off as many others experienced. And he just did a phenomenal job. That last green flag run, something we haven't seen at Martinsville in a long time to finish off a race. But it was just what was ordered up for Blaney and his team. Kind of spoiled Eric Almirola's opportunity there, who, you know, obviously not a part of the playoffs, but that was just so impressive. And I know that as we get into this, and we'll talk more about the championship four here, but you can't immediately go off and say, okay, we're going to make Blaney the favorite because of, you know, what Larson has done. He's the one that has won. But I'm telling you what, if I'm looking at it and I look at the history over in this particular car over the last 2 years, Blaney's going to, if he's not somewhere tied with Larson as the favorite to win this on Sunday, then he's really, really close.
Blaney finished second in that championship race last year to his teammate Joey Logano, who won the championship 2022 at Phoenix and the race. It seems as if this is one of his best tracks, Phoenix Raceway, DJ, for Ryan Blaney. And I was struck by crew chief Jonathan Hassler told Marty Snyder in the post-race show that...
You finished second in the last two Phoenix races. How do you feel about the title run next Sunday?
There's nobody else other than Ryan Blaney that I want to go to Phoenix with to race for a championship.
Of course, he's biased, but he also sounded authentic. He sounded genuine. He sounded like he really believed that Blaney should be looked at as guy to really watch at Phoenix. He's never won there, but he's got six top fives there. So going back to Sunday, let's talk briefly again about his drive. Because as you said, he had this unusual 168-lap green flag run to end the race. Don't often see that at Martinsville. That was after I've already made their final pit stops. So for a lot of that run, Ryan Blaney was in traffic and picking his way through as he made his way to the front and eventually passed Eric Almirola with 23 laps remaining. What did you see there about how Ryan Blaney managed that race?
As I was watching it, I thought that this was going to be a tall order for him to make up the time, because he was at one point, I think, like 6.5 seconds behind Eric Almirola. And it looked like it kind of was stabilized there until Almirola got in some really heavy traffic. I think it was Reddick and maybe Harrison Burton, who were still on the lead lap at the time, racing really hard to try to stay on that. But Almirola had more laps on his tires, and I know was having to save some fuel during certain parts of the run. But as it got to that point, you started seeing not just a tenth of a second a lap, but bigger gains that Ryan Blaney was making. And then I heard him after the race, as I went off somewhere, I was listening to SiriusXM, and I heard an interview that he did there talking about his car that he saw Saturday in practice, that it seemed like he had really good long run speed. And so they wanted to have enough short run speed to do what they wanted to do. But he said actually starting back where he did after they had pitted, he realized that he just needed to be patient. And if he could save some of his tires and not burn them off, just trying to get himself back closer to the front, that he would have better tires as the leader encountered traffic later in the race. If they did have a long run, that they would be in a more difficult position with the older tires, and he could have better tires. And it's exactly what played out for him. So, you know, this is another sign of that maturity that it takes to realize what you have versus your competition and what you're going to be able to utilize in the race if it plays out the way. Obviously, a caution would have changed everything, and he would have had to think differently. But it was just a phenomenal job of using what you have and thinking your way as to how you could get to the front. I think it helped him a lot, too, to know that they had scored all of those stage points in the first two stages, and that regardless of what happened, if he wasn't able to get back to the front, he knew that he had enough points built up. If he ran in the top three or four, then he was going to get through on points. But I just like what I saw in being able to totally manage the race and not overdrive the car, which is something that you find yourself doing with maybe the best car in the field, but you're mired back in traffic wanting to get back to the front.
It does take a lot of patience, obviously, to drive at Martinsville. No one knows that better than you. Ryan Blaney and his crew chief, Jonathan Hassler, made reference to the fact that Blaney has made a lot of changes in the offseason, on the mental side, particularly for avoiding these mistakes that had cost him in the past. We talked about it, I think, the last time you were on the podcast, about the mistakes that Ryan Blaney made in the round of eight last year, you know, speeding, crashing, and that cost him from getting to Phoenix. So he comes into 2023, DJ, with a new approach. It sounds as if he's probably working with a coach who's kind of helping him with that, with the off the track stuff. How do those improvements, do you think, manifest itself, particularly at a track like Martinsville?
I think the biggest thing that even leading up to Martinsville, we saw him get himself in position and not make those mistakes to take himself out. And I'll use this as the perfect example as to what happened with he and Larson the previous race. You know, Larson was gaining on him as they entered pit road, made a big run at him. But Blaney, being really smart, he knew, you know, Larson had nothing to lose because he already had his win. But at Homestead, Blaney knew that he had a car that could get him where he wanted to go. So he was not going to speed on that green flag stop. So even going back to there, I saw someone different where before he would be pushing and sometimes just get over that edge and take themselves right out of everything. Now, that came close to doing that because of Larson's move that he made. But I like the way that he was thinking there. And so I'll just ask you, is this kind of the Kyle Petty effect that we're seeing on Ryan Blaney now with the, you know, I won't call it criticism, but it kind of, I think it was constructive criticism, because I know Kyle likes Ryan Blaney a lot. But you know, with all the talk, we kept talking and talking about, hey, if he can ever make it, if he can take away these mistakes. So now he's put himself in a position. I appreciate and applaud him for saying, hey, and you know, let's figure this out. If it takes going and talking to someone else, there is nothing wrong with that. You know, over the years, we've all talked to people about, you know, how to handle certain situations and get us through that. And when you have that at your disposal, why not use that? And obviously, Ryan has talked to someone. I don't know who it is and don't care who it is, but heck, maybe it is Kyle Petty. Who knows? But he is doing what he needs to do. And that was very obvious in this round of eight that, you know, in particular in this round, that he knew what it was going to take to get through. And he knew that any mistakes could be very costly to them getting to this point. So now he's gotten to this point and he doesn't have to worry about points. He doesn't have to worry about a stage or anything like that. So now he can just go back. He still has to think about the consequences this coming Sunday of making a mistake, because we've seen teams and drivers take themselves right out of an opportunity to win at Phoenix in the years that we've had the championship race here and take themselves right out of it. But I think that this kind of seems that Blaney might have a leg up on a lot of people on the side of thinking his way through this.
Tune in for Sunday's pre-race show where DJ asks Kyle Petty if he's secretly been giving Ryan Blaney advice.
Oh, you can bet it's going to come up.
But I think you said it correctly, is that Kyle is a big believer in Ryan Blaney. And he was on the podcast right after Blaney's victory at Talladega. And Kyle's point was, if this version of Ryan Blaney, the one who is that thinking man's racer, made all the right chess moves at Talladega to win that race, if that version of Ryan Blaney shows up for the round of eight, Kyle said, Ryan Blaney's going to make the championship four and maybe be the guy to win it. And it was somewhat prescient what KP said, because that Ryan Blaney did show up in the round of eight. Like I said, sixth, second, first were his finishes here. And I think KP's frustration was he knows that Ryan Blaney can be that championship contender. But as you said, DJ, there's a point at which I think everybody gets tired of talking about it when you want to see it.
Yes.
And now we're seeing it. Ryan Blaney's always had that low-key, laid-back demeanor, but it's weird. He seems to let emotions kind of get the best of him and pressure him into these mistakes and lapses, and he's managed it really well. And then you combine that with the speed in his cars, that's been the bigger surprise here. I'm not as surprised that Ryan Blaney kind of like figured out how to be a better mental presence, especially like you said, he's getting that help, but that the Penske Fords had struggled much of the year. Especially on mile and a half tracks, like the last two races at Vegas and Homestead this round. Is that the combination they kind of found? And what do you think the team has done, that number 12 Ford team, to give Ryan contending cars to match up with his newfound kind of confidence, composure behind the wheel?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Nate, that it was that combination. First and foremost, they needed to find speed in their race cars. I don't care how good you are. You can make up some as a driver at certain racetracks, but you can't put yourself in a position enough times if you don't have that raw speed. They knew what they needed to do. And Ryan Blaney alluded to this again in that XM radio interview that I heard, that he said, you know, I kept telling my guys that we just need speed. And they didn't question him. He said, they believed that. And they just kept saying, we're working. This isn't something we know we need speed, but easy to say, very hard to do. They kept finding things, little things along the way. And finally, here in the playoffs, we have seen that speed that the Fords in particular have been lacking. I mean, if we go back to the first third of the year, I would have almost guaranteed you that, you know, unless somehow the great Joey Logano found another way to find himself in the championship four without having the best and fastest car, there wasn't probably going to be a Ford in the championship four. But it was Blaney and his team that realized what they needed to work on and give their driver. And then he took the speed that they found and paired that with his new mental approach to this. And it's done just a phenomenal job. This is good to see. You know, this is, you know, we talk all the time about what's the face of the sport going to be as now Kevin Harvick is leaving there. You know, we've seen a number of these veteran drivers. It comes their time to move on. And Kevin Harvick, it's not like Ryan Blaney is going to replace Kevin Harvick, but for the time being, you know, this is a driver in the Ford camp that Ford can feel good about having there and having that ability to put themselves right there in championship moments. So, you know, this was an all-around team effort, if you will. His pit crew has done a nice job. They've given him speed with this race car. And I'm telling you, he's going to battle whoever it is. If it's all four of them, the other three in Blaney, that are racing for those top four spots, which we've seen throughout the years in the championship race. But he's going to be right there. And this is fun to see. You know, I love his attitude. I think the fans really embrace Ryan Blaney. And, you know, as much as I like this for Ryan Blaney, I love this for his dad and for his family, because, you know, I go back to the days of racing with Dave, and, you know, his family has always been in racing, and just a great group of people. And now to see Ryan be right there and have this shot at a championship is nice.
Yeah, Ryan Blaney actually grew up in High Point, because at the time Dave Blaney was racing for Bill Davis Racing, which was based near there. So essentially Martinsville. And Ryan said this to Marty Snyder in his post-race interview, Martinsville is his home track. He was closer to Martinsville than he was to Charlotte growing up in High Point, North Carolina. So this is where Ryan Blaney really wanted to win. And I think you make a nice point, DJ, about how with Kevin Harvick exiting, we're seeing the changing of the guard in this Championship Four. We're going to get to that a little bit later, but this is the youngest Championship Four field ever. And the other driver who made it yesterday at Martinsville was William Byron, another driver in his 20s, like Ryan Blaney, like Christopher Bell. And it was a little bit different for William Byron, though, in terms of Ryan Blaney leaves no doubt. William Byron scores no stage points with a very average car, finishes 13th in what he says is his worst race of the year, and really has to gut this one out, which surprised me, DJ, because he won at Martinsville last year. And I thought, you know, at 30-point lead, he could just roll in, be fine, just qualify well, get some stage points. I thought he'd have this locked up halfway after stage two. I wasn't really buying his pessimism, because after Homestead, William Byron struck this chord of like, I don't know about that 30-point lead. Obviously, he knew that short tracks were not the team's forte that they were last year, and that got kind of compounded by the fact that his helmet blower wasn't blowing air in. So he's under extremely tough conditions. It was a very, very hot day, unseasonably warm day in Martinsville. Again, 13th place finish, nothing to write home about, but he really had to tough it out to get it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't anything to write home about. I mean, he got lapped on the racetrack in that long run. That certainly wasn't what they needed to find themselves in that position, because, you know, it would have gotten even more interesting if a late race caution had to happen and he wasn't the free pass. You know, the guys on NBC telecast were going through all of those scenarios, that as hard as it was, and you could see after the race when he was sitting down on the asphalt beside his car, that, you know, just how difficult a day this was. I didn't know at that exact time that, and maybe I'd heard it earlier, but I'd forgot that his helmet blower wasn't working, but I knew that he had complained about the heat inside the car. And that is a tough place anyway. I can think of back to my days of driving there on some hot days that just physically exhausting to you. And it's a long 500 lap race. And when it's not performing, makes it even harder. He may have done an even better job of driving than Ryan Blaney did to win the race, if you look at it in the way of taking an ill-handling car, things not working inside the car to help him any at all. But he gutted it out, and that told me a lot about this young man and, you know, what he can do. He's had his best season. You know, we can say that about at least three of the four. We can't say that Larson had his best season, but he had a great season once again. But the other three have had just phenomenal seasons for them in their young careers, and shows us that, you know, we've got a lot of racing with them coming on. But I was impressed. Yeah, 13th is not what you want to do. Wasn't what I expected. As you were pointing out, I expected them to, you know, get enough stage points and really not have to be concerned as to what the end of the race might look like going forward yesterday. But they did what they had to do. And every race can't be, you can't script it. Yeah, you can put it up there how you want it, but it can't always play out the way that you want it. So I admire this young man for toughing it out. You know, that's so hard inside the car when you're burning up and just waiting to get to the end. I'm sure, you know, they mentioned at one time when there were 30 laps to go, I said, you know, that seems like a short time, but when you're inside of there fighting this car, you're trying to think about what you need to do and just get yourself to the end. That's a long 30 laps, but I'll assure you they'll be much better when it comes to the championship race this weekend. I expect that. But this is, you know, I realize this isn't technically considered a short track, but every driver will tell you that it drives like a short track, and that's what you have to do. So they have one here. They know how to get the job done, and I expect him to be very competitive.
Byron said there was no chance he was getting out of this car, but the last 50 laps, he said he was really feeling it because, as he described it, it was basically like having a hairdryer blowing hot air
his head. I can't relate to that. While you're trying to make these laps at this really rough and tumble short track, what would that have been like, do you think, if you had to do that? And, you know, what's the longest you've stayed in a car where you wanted to get out but knew you had to get to a finish? Can you relate to what William went through?
Yeah, I certainly can. And you know, those helmet blowers, a lot of times, even on hot days, you think that, wow, is this thing really working? Until you turn it, you could turn it off and then realize the difference. But whenever it's just blowing hot air, then, you know, that's just excruciating. And it makes a hard job so much more difficult. And I tried to, back in the early 90s, I was actually driving for the Wood Brothers, and it was a July 4th race in Daytona. And the new thing was one of these cool vest that you could wear. And it actually had a hat that you put on and tubes in it that ran through, and the water circulated through there. And the vest had tubes in it also. And about 30 laps into, you know, what was the Firecracker 400 at that time, in the middle of the day on Saturday in Daytona, where it was, you know, even though we started in the morning around 11 o'clock, it was still extremely hot. But this thing quit operating. But the worst thing was, is it wouldn't turn off. And it kept circulating hot water through those. And so I actually received second degree burns. Oof. On because it was took to get to a caution before I could jerk the wires out of the thing to make it stop pumping. But it sat there still on my body the rest of the race. So I admire William for sticking it out yesterday, knowing. And it's hard. You could see that he was physically sick. And that's what happens when you get overheated. You have the carbon monoxide, which is prevalent, especially on the short tracks where that air is just there. It never goes away. And so you just get a feeling like you want to literally throw up. And you could see that's kind of, I think William after the race would be like, hey, if you'll turn these cameras off, I'll turn over here and throw up and maybe I'll feel better. But you can see him really struggling to get through that. But, you know, that just shows that it goes to show you what athletes and drivers in this sport will put themselves through to make it happen and how much it means to you. You know, that was a whole body of work through an entire year of his best year that was facing him. He could not get out of the car. And you have to really dig deep. And so many of us have gone through situations like that. And if William Byron goes on to win this championship this weekend, you know, he'll always look back at that day at Martinsville. And yes, yeah, hey, it wasn't anything to brag about with a 13th place finish, but he knows what he had to do as a competitor to make it through and just get to the end of that to where he could be a part of the championship four.
Showed a ton of fortitude and certainly very deserving of being in the championship four field. Let's talk about the four drivers who didn't advance, DJ. We'll start with the pole sitter at Martinsville was Martin Truex Jr. Ran well the first couple of stages. Midway through stage two, he has a speeding penalty, and that pretty much kills this day because track position was so crucial, as it's been with the next gen on short tracks. So Zach Tanzaretti got some quotes from Truex about that speeding penalty.
You know, that one's on me. I didn't think we were speeding, but obviously we were. So first time we ever had that pit stall, and they told me four reds, I'd be safe leaving my box, and I went to two, and we were speeding. So a little confusion there, but yeah, I mean, you know, I had some information to go off of for leaving that box, and felt like I went by that info, and we were way over. So yeah, we just got to look at that. If we ever get that pit stall again, we'll know better. But it was definitely surprising, you know, to speed coming out of the last box.
Is it on him? Because I feel like this is somewhat of a reprise of what we've been talking about, what you have said about this team, what others have said, that it feels like another example of the 19 team just not being buttoned up well enough to keep the driver in the race. Yes, Truex commits the speeding penalty, but if he's not given the right information, to me, that's as much on the team, which is, again, what we've been talking about ad nauseum through the playoffs with Martin Truex Jr.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, that was just, as you watched that yesterday, and I'm not sure that he had the car to beat Ryan Blaney anyway, but they didn't. We'll never know that because they, once again, through the nine races, that was not what we expected to see from this championship driver. And for the most part of it, I still go back and say that you can't put much of this on Martin Truex Jr., just like yesterday, as you're talking about the wrong information that he's given. You only go off of what they tell you. And, you know, I know that technology and new technology is a wonderful thing until it's not. And then you find yourself in trouble. And, you know, they couldn't recover from that. But, you know, it was just another of the races that in this championship round that this team just didn't perform. And, you know, I don't know if it's the leadership. You know, I think there's a lot of great things about James Small that, you know, make us appreciate who he is and what he does and give them good cars. And, they, you know, they won the regular season championship. So obviously he knows what to do. But, you know, but this was from a performance level, from a high level race team. This was as bad as we've seen in the playoffs, in my opinion, from someone that went in, probably went in as the favorite with the way that they were performing. And to say underperformed, that would be, you know, an understatement at this particular time. You hate to see it, but yesterday they just could. It was great that they went there. They won the pole. It, you know, gave you hope that, okay, can they have one race out of nine that they can get through here? And that's all that it took because of their, you know, regular season, I won't call it dominance, but great performance that they had to build up the playoff points that kept getting them through each round. And here they were in the last race, knowing that basically they needed a win to get it done. They go win the pole, they have a fast car, and you know, they find a way to mess that up. So I hate it for Martin, you know, especially after announcing he was coming back for another year. He might be rethinking that after these nine races, but we'll look forward to him to have the off season, go do some fishing and hunting, everything that he loves to do away from the track. And he'll be reset and ready whenever the Clash starts in early February. But, you know, it was just hard to watch this. But I think they have some real searching and soul searching to do to decide what they're going to do to be better when next year comes around.
He and James Small and the team will put in the work in the offseason, returned, renewed, and refreshed, as will Martin Truex Jr.'s Joe Gibbs Racing teammate, Denny Hamlin, who comes up 8 points short of advancing to the championship four after a third place finish. DJ, I thought Denny did a really gracious interview with Parker Kligerman.
You know, really proud of this whole FedEx Toyota team for showing up, you know, today when we really needed to, and did great. They did absolutely great. And, you know, the 12th car was the best car today. So congrats to them and all the final four that made it. They're all deserving. It's going to be a great show next week. But hate we're not in it. Man, I just want to get ready and go try to win next week. I mean, I still love it so much because every week I feel like I got a shot to win. And that's what fuels my passion, even at my age, to keep doing this, is that I'm with the team that I've got that gives me such fast cars every week and gives me a chance to continue to pile on those stats before the end of my career. And it's not over by any means. We got a long way to go.
It almost sounded like Denny has already kind of made peace with the fact that he's the winningest driver in Cup history without a championship. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. But it almost seems like he's kind of reached the point where if it doesn't happen for him, he's going to be okay in some ways with not getting that title. And, you know, maybe it's that on the side now, he's got this burgeoning 23-11 race team with two drivers who could win championships. You know, Tyler Reddick just made it to the round of eight yesterday and didn't quite get there. Bubba Wallace certainly showed speed throughout the playoffs. Your take on where Denny kind of is in terms of his career and where things stand for him?
We can't just say yesterday that they didn't get it done. They brought a fast race car. They put themselves in position once again. There simply was one car better. You know, I know Denny finished third, but Blaney was the only better car there yesterday than Denny Hamlin was. So they did everything that they kind of needed to do. You know, their whole round of eight went awry, you know, last week at Homestead with what they said was a power steering issue. And, you know, that was just very unfortunate because he had himself in a position there to win, or if not win, he was going to run in the top three and gather the points that he needed to be in a much better position. And if that doesn't happen, then we're talking about something totally different. You know, it's not William Byron that's getting through on points. It would have been Denny Hamlin. So these are things that do happen. I hate it for Denny because I know how much it would mean to Denny, and we've talked for a lot of years about the seasons that he's had, put himself in position, and he just constantly does this, puts himself right in position. I did really feel like that he came into the playoffs this year with the most speed and the most momentum. And, you know, that first round, he started out just incredibly fast and just never quite carried that on through the next couple of rounds, but it was good enough. And it looked like this round of eight that they kind of found things once again. So I still hope, they're still hoping me that Denny Hamlin wins a championship. I appreciate the driver that he is, the person that he is, willing to speak his mind. His record, his wins, you know, the big wins that he has, you know, those all are Hall of Fame credentials that are just so impressive. And now he has this, he had the idea to build this race team with Michael Jordan. They put it together. You see great things happening with that. And I know that he talks that, you know, he might have to live through that. And it's this championship that he wants so desperately might come through that in time. But I know that he's not going to give up on this. I knew yesterday had to be a very disappointing day at the end of it for him. And it's hard to put your thoughts all together there. But I know deep inside that, you know, Denny Hamlin, don't read into that he's not thinking that he can't go back next year. But as you get older, you realize that your opportunities are slipping by. And so, you know, I'm sure that we'll see him battling for that once again. But again, he had a great race, and just appreciate who he is. And he's going to leave a mark on the sport in a lot of ways. And they're all very, very positive ways. You just don't want that moniker that he's the winningest driver to not win a championship. And, you know, but Mark Martin went through that. And I don't think any of us that raced with and against Mark Martin and know who he is, and much like Denny, you don't hold that against them that they never were able to get that title, especially Denny to this point. You know, when I think about Mark Martin, I still think of one of the greatest race drivers in the history of NASCAR that I had the opportunity to watch and then to eventually race with and against through a lot of years. So, this, again, unfortunate for Denny, but, he has built his legacy in this sport.
You have unique insight in that age comes with perspective. Mm-hmm. And next month, Denny Hamlin turns 43. You were a few weeks shy of 43 when you won your championship in 1999, and that came on the heels of two dominant seasons by Jeff Gordon, where he won the championship, where your team was right there and maybe would win the title in any other year.
Yeah.
Going back to like where you were 25 years ago and where Denny Hamlin is now going into the offseason, looking ahead to 2024, how he might kind of reset his mind, how he might look at, you know, things now at his age and where he is in life, his career, and where you were then, and maybe how it all relates.
Yeah, I think I can relate. And as I was watching yesterday, I was thinking about those very things that I realized that, you know, not as many drivers are driving into their getting close to mid 40s and having as much success. It's such a great group of talent, you know, in their younger years. And I think that that's having a lot to do with it because we have so many more that are competitive in that situation. So for Denny, it's making it more difficult to achieve that. But you're right. I wasn't sure that I was going to get there. We came close, especially 96, 97, and 98. I mean, we had outstanding years. And, you know, I thought, wow, we're just doing everything that we can do. I'm 97, I won the most races that I won in any year of my career, winning 7 races, one of them being right here in Phoenix. And, you know, it was just incredible to think that, gosh, we do this and we can't win because of this guy named Jeff Gordon, that's obviously one of the greatest drivers to ever come along. But I think that at the end of 98, I had some health issues during that. And so I got through that. And once I got through that, I was like, okay, we can still go do this. You know, we have built the foundation here. And that's what Denny has done. He's built that foundation. He knows what he has to do and get it done. He will be a part of the championship and in the playoffs next year. And it may pop up that, you know, maybe it's not the best regular season that he'll have. But I'll guarantee you that we'll see his name through the first couple of rounds with an opportunity to go into the round of 8. And he is just so talented that he's going to be able to do this again. And again, I know yesterday was a huge disappointment, but that this offseason gives you time to reflect and look ahead and get yourself prepared and ready once again, because he's just such a huge competitor. I don't care if it's on the racetrack, on the golf course, used to be on the basketball court a lot. I don't think he's doing as much of that anymore. He is just so competitive. And, I just hope that he gets that opportunity again.
Put a bow on Martinsville. The other two drivers who didn't make it, Tyler Reddick, Chris Buescher, who was your dark horse pick to make the championship for. It seemed like it just wasn't quite his time yet.
Yeah, it was a great season. His best season in the Cup Series to this point. And, you know, I think that what we saw and what emerged is a driver that we'll be keeping our eye on. You know, this team that Brad Keselowski came in, bought into, you know, vowed to turn this around and bring Roush Fenway back to prominence and adding his name to that. You know, they have done that. And the problem is that we talked about the speed that the 12 team and Ryan Blaney brought to the playoffs. Chris Buescher and his team were good, but good's not good enough whenever you get into the round of eight. You've got to figure out a way to be great during that time. And I think this was probably a learning situation for them. I'll have to say, though, that Brad and his 16 seemed to bring a lot of speed to the round of eight in particular, even though he found himself in the wrong spot a couple of times, just like yesterday. They had a lot of speed where Buescher found themselves. They were on an uphill climb each and every one of these races. Just didn't seem that they could get their qualifying and show the speed there. So, you know, they were having to battle in different ways. But, you know, again, a great season. You know, yeah, my pick was way out there. But I thought that, you know, what I had seen, that, you know, this was a possibility. You know, I could either go in and steal a win or point his way through there. But really proud, and it was fun to watch him in this season. Now, as they reset, you know, can they come back out? You know, this was a monumental season for that team to turn around and bring the cars and the speed that they did throughout the season. And can they continue with this next year?
Let's look ahead now to Phoenix, DJ. And let's start Xfinity Series Championship. Race happens Saturday. You got Justin Allgaier, Cole Custer, John Hunter Nemechek, Sam Mayer. And you and I were talking before we got started. I think we're both surprised that Justin Allgaier is not a champion yet, but one of these drivers will become a first-time Xfinity Series champion. And this is the latest of many tries for Justin Allgaier.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, you know, we always said, because he's Justin Allgaier has been so good at Phoenix through the years, and I think a lot of his success was on the older track before the reconfiguration of it, much like Kevin Harvick when you look back over the years. But they still run well enough, and Allgaier has run well enough here to make you think that, you know, you're going to have to beat this guy. He has the most experience by far. But when you look at it, you know, all of them other than Sam Mayer made their way through the Xfinity Series, found themselves in Cup rides, and maybe not the greatest Cup rides, even though Custer was at Stewart Haas Racing and a good ride, and he won a race there. But they all made their way there, but then came back down and have worked their way back through this, and now a part of the championship four here. And you know, this is going to be a great battle. I think I have to, even with Allgaier's success here, John Hunter Nemechek has brought speed pretty much every weekend of this season. And I still think he's the driver that you're going to have to beat. You know, it was a Joe Gibbs Racing, Ty Gibbs, that won here last year and got that championship. And I look at John Hunter coming in here along the same lines as that. You know, he's won the most races. But he's going to have a real battle on his hands of getting through that. And, you know, this would be great for his hand. You know, his dad Joe is a former champion of the Xfinity side. And, you know, it would just be great to see that happen. But you can make a case for each of these guys. Cole Custer has been just solid once he got back and got, you know, himself acclimated to these cars once again. They've been solid. And then Sam Mayer, the run that he's put on in winning four races, I think it's four out of the last 13 maybe that he's won coming in. So, you know, there's nobody hotter than what he is except for maybe John Hunter. You know, this is going to be fun to watch. And knowing that we're going to be on Saturday looking at someone gathering that first championship makes this really special.
And we could see it Sunday as well. We've got three drivers in the championship for the Cup race Sunday in Bell, Blaney, Byron, all gunning for their first championship in the Cup Series. Larson going for his second. Youngest championship four field in history, DJ, by nearly 4 years. The average age is just over 29. Kyle Larson is the old man at 31 years old. So it does seem sort of fitting, again, when we touched on it earlier, that Harvick is exiting. You're kind of having that Gen X series of drivers make their departure. And now we're seeing that, hey, these millennial Gen Z drivers are going to be the ones we'll be talking about for the championship in the future.
Yeah. This is the best of the best right here. And you know, again, as you point out, when you look at the sport going forward, these are the names and faces that we're going to be looking at. And, you know, there's a number of others that, you know, we talked about there with, you know, Tyler Reddick and Chris Buescher and many other young drivers that are coming along, and some that are going to be coming along with a better opportunity. You know, you talk about Bubba Wallace and many other drivers that we feel like are going to be solid in this. But this group that we have now, for this to be the youngest group there, and to think that the oldest one battling for a championship on Sunday is just 31 years old. The race wins that they have already produced, just phenomenal. And, you know, the abilities that they have shown, especially with this new car, are just amazing, and makes it fun to watch, knowing that the sport's in good hands, if you will. So, you know, there's a 3-4 chance we'll have a new champion, but the one guy they have to beat, and I'm sure when the odds come out, I didn't look this morning, but you know, it has to be Kyle Larson on top. That's who you're going to have to beat. Experience does matter. It's not the determining factor, but when you race someone that has been in this position, and not only have they been there, but they took advantage of that opportunity to go and grab that with getting the championship back in 2021, then you realize that Kyle Larson is the man to beat. But you know, it's going to be a great battle. We've seen the driver go on to that has to win this race to become the champion. You've had to win every single year. I know that as I listened to some fans yesterday on the radio after it was over, expressing their opinions and things with it, that this might be the year that ends. I think we say that every year because you've got so many more that have the possibility than the four that do have that possibility. But I honestly believe once again that as we go into this on Sunday, that you're going to have to win this race if you planned on being the champion.
Yeah, I don't see that streak ending. I mean, as strong as Ryan Blaney is at Phoenix, and knowing Larson won here to win the championship in 2021, like you said, it's happened all 9 previous years. I don't see why it wouldn't happen this year. No. We'll get out on your pick. Do you have a pick? Any predictions for what happens Sunday?
Yeah, you know, and it's easy to go off of the most recent thing that happened, but it's not just the most recent. It's the recent history at Phoenix with Ryan Blaney and his team with this car. And I think that means a lot, that they have everything that it takes. They have the speed in the cars. You know, he's performed well here. As you mentioned earlier, he finished second to his teammate Joey Logano here last year when Logano was the champion. And I just believe this is Ryan Blaney's time. I believe he comes in as the hottest driver performing on this type of track. And I just think that. Now, you know, I could sit here and make an easy case that when you talk about Larson has won here and he's won a championship here, Byron has won at this racetrack recently. And then you talk about Christopher Bell, a young man has stepped up the last 2 years and made his way into the championship four by winning big races in critical moments. You can make a case for each one of them. That's why I'm so excited to get to Sunday and see exactly what happens. But my pick's going to be Ryan Blaney.
All right, well, there you have it. And we're excited to get to Phoenix, where Dale Jarrett is based these days. And oh, by the way, also a World Series in town.
The high-octane world of NASCAR invades Chase Field, and the Arizona Diamondbacks, as they're fighting for a spot in the playoffs when the final position's left to punch their ticket into the postseason. And kicking things off tonight, how about Dale Jarrett, the 66-year-old, goes out for batting practice and throws out the first pitch. The 1999 Cup Series champion and now Valley resident having some fun here with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I can't help but note, DJ, that since you threw out the first pitch, this has been a charm team. So I think your special championship touch has worked out well for them. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's been fun to have some conversations with people and talking about that, the level that they performed at, since I was fortunate to be there back in September and throw out the first pitch and take some batting practice, which I shouldn't have been doing, but did it and had fun anyway. But they're on a great roll. And just to watch this team battle, you know, it embodies exactly what we talk about these championship four drivers. They're battling and having to get themselves in position and what they had to work to get there and then perform at that high level. And whenever the Diamondbacks lost that first game in such a tough way on Friday night after leading the majority of the game and then get tied on a home run and then eventually losing it on a home run. I wondered how they would respond to that, but they came back on Saturday night and outperformed. So as the series moves right here to Phoenix tonight, weather's going to be great. Look forward to knowing that they've got three games here in Phoenix to get it done. And, you know, once we get past that, we're going to be in championship mode, whichever way, thinking about and talking about everything that's going to happen out at the Phoenix Raceway. Sold out once again for the weekend. Camping is going to be great. So should be a fun weekend. Low 80s for temperatures, so can't be any better.
It's going to be a great week for sports in Phoenix, and we're looking forward to being out there. Just like we always look forward to having Dale Jarrett on the NASCAR and NBC podcast. DJ, as always, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Nate.
We appreciate Dale Jarrett for joining us on the NASCAR and NBC podcast. Thanks to Motorsports Manager Emily Conboy for helping set up and record the episode. The NASCAR Cup and Xfinity Series will be crowning champions this weekend at Phoenix Raceway. Coverage of Saturday's Xfinity Championship race will begin at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on the USA Network. Then on Sunday, pre-race coverage of the 2023 Cup Series Championship Finale at Phoenix will get underway at 2 p.m. Eastern on NBC and Peacock. You can head to NBCSports.com/NASCAR for all the information and schedules on how and when to watch. That's at NBCSports.com/NASCAR. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.